Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite international football podcast. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me across the water is the one and only Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, I mean, catching my breath. Just watch those European playoffs. Obviously, today is a World Cup episode, and we're right in the vibe of it all because... Well, I'm in America where it's all happening and we've just watched these European playoffs, mate, and big storylines. I mean, a sad one in a way for you, but some big ones.
Yeah, 100%. We now have 46 of the 48 teams locked in for the World Cup. By the time you're listening to this, all 48 teams will be confirmed. But if we were going to wait to record this post the games between Jamaica against Congo and also the other game between Bolivia and Iraq, we would be waiting until 6 a.m. UK time. So we're gonna just fire it out as best we can with what we've got so far. But the European four final places, as you say, are confirmed. And they have gone to Bosnia and Herzegovina, who beat Italy on penalties. They've gone to Turkey, who joined the US's group after they beat Kosovo 1-0 in Pristina, to Sweden, who won 3-2 against Poland with a last-gasp Viktor Gyökeres goal. And in that moment, became the first and only European side to qualify through the back door of the Nations League, having not got into the top two of their group, which is interesting. And finally, Czechia, who won again on penalties after a 2-2 draw, this time with Denmark. And look, you say it's sad, and obviously I'm a bit frustrated because I thought Ireland had Czechia's number, right, for the first half an hour at the very least of that game on Thursday. But also, fair play to the Czechs. They've just gone through two 120-minute games plus penalties back-to-back. The roller coaster of emotions from being 2-0 down to the Republic of Ireland, clawing their way back into it, winning on pens, being 1-0 up for the majority of this game against Denmark, getting pulled back, taken to extra time, taking the lead again in extra time and being pulled back again and then winning a second penalty shootout in a row. The absolute heart rates of these lads, I've got to say, fair play to them, because that is a journey these Czech fans have been on. And bear in mind, this was a fan base who were, you know, completely and utterly at odds with their team after they saw them lose to the Faroe Islands in qualification. There was real frustration around this Czech side. And, you know, to have pulled it out of the fire in the way that they actually have here, I've got to say, huge credit to them and huge credit to Miroslav Kubek, who was brought in to manage the team pretty much before these games to kind of turn it around. It was brought in December, right, to replace the manager who had such a poor qualification campaign in the eyes of the Czech FA and the fan base. These are his first games in charge of the national team. And he's won two penalty shootouts after a 2-2 draws after a long old managerial career, most famous for his work at Victoria Plzeňa, who he's led to a couple of league titles over three spells. But, you know, to come in and do that, name a new captain, it was bold to put Ladislav Krejci in as the captain when Socek's been there for such a long period of time. And it's paid off for him handsomely. They're back at the World Cup for the first time in a long, long time. So, you know, shouts out to the Czechs as well. As much as it's frustrating, given the circumstances around it, you do have to, I think, stand back and applaud at times, because that is an incredible journey to have gone on.
Yeah, and I encourage anyone who wants to hear about Jack's Irish dismay to tune into the Patreon from Monday, because he did break down his trip to Prague and he did still have a nice time, but he did have his heart broken out there. So fair play to you for giving the Czechs their flowers, because you know that now could have been you tonight going through to the world. I mean, at the time we thought, wow, they won't beat Denmark anyway, but they have. And that means that maybe you could have, mate.
I think the really frustrating bit about it is the way that, that the Czechs really put their stamp on the game was they absolutely excelled from set pieces. They played well on the break. And I was like, this is exactly what Ireland would have done. And, you know, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and put your hands up. As a Fulham and Ireland fan, you know, heartbreak's kind of in my DNA. So we're able to kind of shift it a little bit quicker, perhaps. But let's come on to the big story, right? Because of these four games, the biggest one is Italy. Have been knocked out on penalties by Bosnia and Herzegovina. And this was a strange game in some ways, but it means that Italy are missing their third World Cup in a row. You know, the only Brazil have won more World Cups than Italy. This is a footballing powerhouse, a nation who have been at the very top of the game for so much of its history, who are going through the wildest barren spell of their nation's footballing history at this exact moment. And the manner of this as well, you'll remember that there were images after the game where they won against Northern Ireland in Bergamo, where the Italian coaching staff were seen celebrating Bosnia's victory over Wales, which is never a particularly good look. And why some Italian broadcast director thought that was a good thing to put out on Italian TV, I will never know, right? Like that's a decision. But this game started quite well. They took the lead through Moise Kean pouncing on an error. And then Alessandro Bastoni was sent off. From that moment onwards, it was kind of Bosnia pressure and Tabakovic kind of forced home the equalizer for them. It went all the way through then, had extra time. It wasn't without incident, but it didn't feel like anyone was hugely going to win it. And if anyone was, it was Bosnia. And Bosnia then stepped up and put together an almost perfect penalty shootout in terms of the way we were. Pio Esposito missed the first penalty for Italy and he blazed it over the bar. And then Fratesi hit his penalty off the underside of the bar and out. It's a strange one, Dean, because I think that there's been a frustration around the Italian national team for a little while. But equally, it was hard to tell exactly what that looked like because they lost out in qualifying to an incredibly good Norway side, who we're going to speak about a little bit more later on in the program. But it just feels like, again, they've been crippled by the fear in the moment where it counts most. And after that first game against Northern Ireland, you're like, okay, they dealt with that really well. And we know that these playoffs have been a difficult period for Italy. You know, you remember the heartbreaks, the Sweden game, the North Macedonia game. They've dealt with the first hurdle and the first obstacle pretty comfortably in all accounts. And they get here, Bastoni is sent off. It won't have slipped the memory of many, I think, that you'll remember after the Derby d'Italia, where Bastoni celebrated the sending off of Pierre Kalulu, one of the Italian ministers in Parliament tweeted saying he shouldn't represent the national team. We don't want that kind of character. Well, I imagine that tweet will be going viral again today after what happened here.
Oh, man. This is wild. An amazing night for Bosnia and an extremely good achievement. And you know, they'll believe like that they've got opportunities as well in the World Cup, given the group that they've landed on, which we're going to talk about in a bit. But for Italy, just like dismay, despair, disaster. I mean, three in a row is bad, but this one particularly bad because there are so many teams in it. Like, it's 48 teams at the World Cup, and Italy, a powerhouse of the game, aren't there. Obviously, the last time the World Cup was held in America, it ended in heartbreak for Italy on penalties because they lost a penalty shootout in the final to Brazil. This time around, they've lost a penalty shootout, but haven't even managed to make it onto American soil. Obviously, like in my WhatsApp groups at the moment, there's a lot of happy England fans because they put us through this. In 2021, we thought we were ready for our big moment. We thought England were going to win a trophy and we lost to the Italians on penalties. So there are a few smug England fans, but they're probably forgetting on the same night we've just lost 1-0 to Japan. But nevertheless, there needs to be an inquiry about what's going on here. Gattuso is trying to put a bold front on it all, saying they don't deserve it, saying they played with 10 men since the 40th minute. This is what happens in football. I'm proud of my team. We're hurt, blah, blah, blah. It's not okay, is it, Jack, that it's even come down to a playoff really in the first place, but then failing to get through it. Bastoni is obviously going to have to deal with all of that. But this is kind of the death of a giant. Three World Cups in a row is kind of the death of a footballing giant in that sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. And look, it's going to take a complete kind of overhaul, I think, of the entire system. And look, there are good Italian teams coming through. We've seen success in the unders level, so it doesn't mean that everything is done and dusted. But there is just this kind of scary element of this with Italy now. And missing out on three, as you say, well, you kind of look at it and think, ooh, like at what point does that fear and that kind of, you know, crippling sense of maybe inadequacy start to actually float through into the players as soon as they pull on that famous Azzurri shirt? Like, that's the difficult bit, I think, here in terms of what it looks like. One can happen, right? Like, two, okay, you look at the way it happened, and obviously it was going to be Portugal in that final if they got to that playoff final. Instead, they ended up crashing out to North Macedonia in what has been kind of termed one of the most embarrassing days in Italian football history. And here, in a setup where, look, the two kind of teams that they thought they were playing, they played Northern Ireland, and we thought that they would probably get the job done in that one. It hasn't been a great qualifying campaign from a Northern Irish perspective. But also, you know, it did feel like they were going to get Wales. And when they don't get Wales, do they relax? Is that what happens here? It was a strange game of football. But to not give the Bosnians the credit they deserved after knocking out Wales, yes, it was a penalty shootout, but the performance that they put in, and look, Wales weren't particularly good in Cardiff that night, which is a rarity in so many different ways. It almost is like the situation threw them off in some ways. And I suppose you could probably level the same about Denmark, right? Like, you saw the run that Ireland were on, and you know, the fact that they got into the playoffs by those wins over Portugal and Hungary in such dramatic fashion. Were they setting up almost for the idea that it would be Ireland in the same way that Italy might have been setting up for the idea that it might be worse? Maybe I'm overthinking it. And look, that's perfectly fine. But it's almost like you kind of, the idea that they were celebrating that penalty shootout win for Bosnia tells me that they were expecting Wales, and they were expecting that to be a harder game, which I think is a worry if you're looking at that from a kind of step back Italian football perspective, because you're like, no, just deal with what's in front of you. And tonight they've not been able to do that. And yes, you can look at the moments. Yes, you look at the Bastoni challenge, which is wild and probably unnecessary considering they're 1-0 up at that moment. Also, it will go unnoticed because he obviously scored, but Moise Kean has a glorious opportunity racing through on goal to make it 2-0 in the second half and just put the game to bed. There's opportunities for Fede DiMarco as well, and a couple of others who are all having, you know, relatively good seasons. I think Moise Kean's is being overplayed because his recent form has been good, whereas the first half of the season was a mess in a Fiorentina shirt. But like, he's in a good goal scoring streak, which he's obviously continued, but you would have expected him to bury that. Fede DiMarco has been MVP of Serie A, as far as I've been concerned this season. Like, these are the players you want the chances to fall to. And when they've fallen to them, they haven't been able to take them. And instead, it's gone all the way to penalties. And at that point, becomes a lottery. And it's a lottery today Italy have lost.
Yeah, exactly, mate. And there's, you can hide behind excuses. You can hide behind the 10 men. You can say you didn't deserve this, whatever. It doesn't matter. It happened, and you've got to accept it, and you've got to deal with the fallout of it. But yeah, very, very strange times. And I didn't expect it. I really did think that Italy would clinch their place.
Yeah, me too. I thought this would be a kind of playoff path that they would find their way through. And instead, it's Bosnia and Herzegovina who are making just their second World Cup finals as an independent nation. I think it's their first since 2014. So yeah, amazing for Bosnia and amazing for Ed and Dzeko to get one last go around the merry-go-round. There will be no last go around the merry-go-round though for Robert Lewandowski, as his Polish side were knocked out 3-2 by Sweden at maybe my favorite named ground in the world, the Strawberry Arena, which is in Stockholm. Just a great stuff. And there used to be the Friends Arena, which I liked as well. But the Strawberry Arena is sweet. And it was sweet for Sweden as Viktor Gyökeres scored a last-minute winner. Great game between these two. Swung from pillar to post. Sweden took the lead, pegged back by Poland, took the lead again, pegged back by Poland again in the second half. And they went all the way to the 88th minute where Sweden were piling on the pressure. And the goal is a bit of a mess. There's like five attempts in the Polish box and it falls to Gyökeres, who sort of bullies someone out there. I think it's Bednarek out of the way and volleys it into the top corner of the net. And everyone goes absolutely berserk, as you well might imagine. But incredible for him, incredible for Graham Potter, whose stock was at an all-time low after leaving the West Ham United job, comes back in to this Sweden national team when they were at a low after John Dahl Tomasson did a horrendous job, let's be honest, their six games in qualifying. I think they drew two, lost four. It was not a pretty sight for a Swedish side that has so much attacking talent, even if the defensive line leaves a bit to be desired. But Graham Potter has come in there. He's kind of reignited the flame, I think, for a lot of people. You see him giving his interview responses in Swedish, which is something one of our patrons, Simon, who's a Swedish fan, was talking about on the post box the other day. But he's kind of re-engaged everyone. And all, you know, it was about results then when they gave him that new contract. He's delivered two big wins, first over Ukraine, now here over Poland, and Sweden are going to the World Cup.
Mate, Graham Potter was absolutely bouncing around at the end. Like he, you know, he looked the most Swedish out of anyone the way he was celebrating it. But very funny, and obviously a big moment for him because, you know, he's people were surprised at the job, surprised that he took it, surprised that in his situation that's where they wanted to turn. But Sweden, obviously, you know, for long stretches weren't one of the better teams in qualifying at all. I think they only made the playoffs because of their Nations League.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they went through the back door.
Yeah, so like they didn't even manage in qualifying to get into a position good enough to be at this stage. But because of their Nations League rank, which most people don't care about, they've managed to get into this last chance saloon and they've made it through. What's nice then for Sweden is that they are arriving as a proper underdog, like, okay, we're just here, we're the lucky ticket and we've got nothing to lose. And again, we'll talk about that in the second part when we talk about the groups and analyze them, because Sweden actually might have some opportunity at that stage. But yeah, brilliant for Swedish football, and you know, absolute scenes, one with the goal that Gyökeres gets, and then secondly when Potter's celebrating at the end.
Yeah, 100%. A good night for Swedish football. So shouts out to Graham Potter and shouts out to that squad who have turned it around in a couple of months after the departure of John Dahl Tomasson. And finally, Turquia, who are obviously going into the US's group. They won 1-0 against Kosovo in Pristina. The only goal from Kerem Atakoglu, who touched in at the far post. A lot of calls for a VAR check on this one, but it was onside. And
it looked a little bit dodgy, didn't it? But yeah, he's all right. Yeah,
it was fine. And Kenan Yildiz at the heart of it, as he often is with this Turkish national team. They go into the US's group. They've done a good job here, Turkey, in just kind of managing this, because this looked like a little bit of a tricky task, and just having to kind of read the situation in terms of how those two teams were going to set up, which were quite different. And obviously they hadn't had long to prepare for Kosovo, who had to get past Slovakia to get to this point, and came out the right side of an absolute thriller in that game against Slovakia. But I think it's interesting because this is a Turkey side who obviously can score a lot of goals, can concede them too. We saw them ship six to Spain in qualifying. We also saw them hit six a couple of times. And I'm excited to see them be able to kind of strut their stuff, especially considering that this time around, especially coming through the playoffs in this manner, I don't think a lot of people are going to be talking about Turkey as dark horses. And that's something that they've had to kind of deal with over the last couple of tournaments when they've come into them. This one feels like they can go there and just show what they're capable of. And look, it's something we'll talk about a bit later in the groups, but this is a group that I think that they will look to go and attack. And they are a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and obviously, like, this is just a football-loving nation. I watched the Romania playoff game to get through to the final, and they weren't always the most entertaining, but they were just making sure that they were going to remain in that game. Romania gave them a good battle, but ultimately didn't have enough in that one. They make it through 1-0 and they get through to the final against Kosovo and win it 1-0. So like you're saying, typically over the last year or so, Turkey games have had a lot of goals in them, but they've made it through to the finals with two 1-0 wins. But that, honestly, mate, it's of all the fanatical support that we'll see, like when you see the scenes across Turkey, I can't imagine what it's like right now in the immediate hour after they have actually qualified. And I'm sure there'll be some great videos coming out, but they will be so excited about this opportunity because they've had some really talented players coming through as well. It's a good crop of players, and they just needed they just need to get over that line and start establishing themselves properly and getting this opportunity to show that they can go far in these competitions once they're there. And I think they've got a really nice chance, actually. Now that they're there, I think that they'll be like, we're not just there to make up the numbers. Like, we're going to give this a crack.
Yeah, 100%. Talking of the fans, I was lucky enough to be in Dortmund when Turkey played, I think it was Georgia, in the first game of their game in Euro 2024. They were absolutely unbelievable, these fans. Like, it took over the city. And look, it helps that there's obviously a lot of people with Turkish roots living in Germany. There's a big crossover there, fine. But, like, it was just an absolute cacophony of noise and colour. And it was such a wonderful atmosphere. So I'm excited for that to make it to the World Cup stage as well. Right, we'll take a little break then. We come back on the other side. We're going to get stuck into these groups and start talking about which ones we're most excited about. Make sure you stick with us. You're on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC. We're going to get stuck into these groups. Ranking the World Cup groups was the title of today's episode. We promised you it. We're about to deliver, but maybe not in the way that you might think. Let's just read them out first. Let's get through these groups and put them in their place now that we have most of these teams locked and loaded. So Group A is going to be Mexico, South Africa, Korea Republic, and Czechia after their win over Denmark. Group B is going to be Canada, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Qatar and Switzerland. Group C is Brazil, Morocco, Haiti and Scotland. Group D is the USA, Paraguay, Australia and Turkey. Group E is Germany, Curaçao, Cote d'Ivoire and Ecuador. Group F is Netherlands, Japan, Sweden and Tunisia. Group G, Belgium, Egypt, Iran and New Zealand. Group H, Spain, Cap Verde, Saudi Arabia and Uruguay. Group I is France, Senegal, Bolivia or Iraq and Norway. Group J is Argentina, Algeria, Austria and Jordan. Group K is Portugal, Congo or Jamaica, Uzbekistan and Colombia. And group L is England, Croatia, Ghana and Panama. So there you have it. There's just the 48 teams, or actually 50 teams right out, but 48 teams. Who are still kind of in this competition, who are going to be there. And we're going to do this slightly differently, Dean. So I'm going to hand over to you to kind of set us up and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I thought rather than go through them group by group at this stage, because obviously we're still a couple of months away, we can do that closer to it. We'll just
That'll be full group by group previews closer to the time.
We'll give our raw thoughts on what we're expecting here in a bit of a more fun way. So the first, I've got six questions to pose, Jack, on the groups, and we'll go through them one by one. The first question is, which group will see the single biggest upset? So where do you think, like, the big headline could come from in these group stages?
Okay, all right, I've got a couple of answers. I'll give you those and then we'll go from there. So Group J, potentially, which is Argentina, Algeria, Austria, and Jordan. Both Austria and Algeria are really good sides. Jordan are a good side as well, but I think they lack the kind of firepower to actually upset Argentina. And I think that Austria and Algeria are the kind of sides that will make life difficult for the reigning champions. So, you know, we've seen this Argentina side obviously start slowly at the last World Cup and come through to win it. So this isn't basically saying that they're going to fall out at any of these points. And I do think that whilst we're talking about this bit, we'll talk about a group of death, I'm sure, later. The fact that eight teams go through as best third places does offset those kind of things a bit. So you can almost afford an upset in the group stages in a way that maybe you haven't been able to hugely in years gone by. It's kind of been like, if you lose, you then have to win both the others and hope things go your way. As opposed to now, I think you can lose one and maybe pick up 4 points and still end up going through, which is a little bit of a shame in some ways. And that is, I think, the big downside of a 48-team World Cup. I'm all for more teams at World Cups. I think the storylines, et cetera, the narratives. But I think that is a downside. And to be honest, I think I'd go to 64 and just deal with the two teams in each.
What?
But that's a separate point, right? That's a different.
You just want Ireland to be at World Cup. I know you're going.
I go to 128 to get Ireland at a World Cup, right? That's where we're at. But like, I do think that does hold it back in terms of the way it all shakes out. I think the third place is going through doesn't really work for me in terms of I've had that opinion about the Euros in the last few as well. It's not something I particularly love, but that's not the question. So Group J, I do think that Austria and Algeria will look at that Argentina game, especially early on, and think, you know what? We come at them, especially considering how well-organized Austria are. I loved watching them at the last Euros. I thought they were a heap of fun and they move forward in a really smart way. So I think that there's potential there. I think Group C, which is the group that has Brazil, Morocco, Haiti, and Scotland, I don't necessarily think it's a massive upset if Morocco beat Brazil. considering that they were World Cup semi-finalists last time out. But I'm still very hit and miss on Brazil. And I do wonder if they could fall to an incredibly well-organized Scotland, like to kind of gain revenge for that opening game of 1998. I'm really low on where Brazil are right now. And obviously that can change, but I've not seen anything in the performances in this international break. Yes, they only lost 2-1 to France, but if you watch that game, it was so much more of a mismatch than it actually looks in terms of the scoreline. Like, to suggest that they're going to cause any real damage in this World Cup. And I do think that there will be sides looking to go and make their mark by leaving a hit on Brazil, considering where they are and the kind of fragility that feels like it's still around that squad right now, which is just miles off. I think obviously still incredible attacking talent, but the rest of it still feels miles off where it's been in recent years. So I think that's one. And the last one I would go to is Group F, which is Netherlands, Japan, Sweden, and Tunisia. But also, I would probably argue, would Japan beating the Netherlands be that much of an upset these days, considering how Japan have performed at the last couple of World Cups?
No, okay,
we'll take that one out.
Not in real terms, but it would on paper, right? Because on paper, you're still not expecting it, and that's what's weird about these situations, and that's why we pose questions like this. So, I think the biggest single upset that will happen is Brazil don't win their group. And I think that I think that there is a, you know, Brazil are clear favourites to win this group and will be one of the top three favourites to win the tournament, do you think? Like, is that fair to say? Like,
no, I don't think they will be in the top three. In terms of the bookmakers, I think they struggle to crack top five.
Do you? I think that's because the problem is that people just traditionally stick them there because it's Brazil and because a lot of money comes in for Brazil. People just back them. So that's why
Manchester United of the international sphere.
Yeah, you just see them up there because even if you don't know much about their team, even if they're not doing particularly well, Brazil's Brazil. And so, yeah they're obviously going to get a lot of love. So, okay, maybe top three is a bit of a leap. I'd say top five for sure.
Okay, they are currently, I just looked it up. I looked it up and this is just one bookmaker, but they are currently joint fourth favourites with Argentina, which is wild to me. Like, absolutely.
But as I say, it'll be because of the, you know, they have to be careful with how they judge these things and they can't make them like 20-1 just in case things come good. But Morocco, 2022 semi-finalists.
No, pile on.
Yeah. Semi-finalists last time out. Obviously, have just won AFCON. They're making waves in the game, right? They're making waves in the game, and it's very reasonable to believe that Morocco beat Brazil at the World Cup. And if that happens, win the group, and that starts to open things up and cause more surprises. So I do think that will be personally the biggest single upset of the group stage.
Okay. All right. I do think that if the reigning champions were to lose a game, that would be seen as a massive, massive thing. And I know we've kind of shaken off the idea that, you know, the curse of the last winner has been, you know, because France got to the final last time out. And we'd seen a couple of winners kind of fall by the wayside in the years gone by. But I think that a reigning champion losing in the group stage would be a big, big storyline as well.
Yeah, but I also think that we're starting to learn that the group stage and the knockout stage are almost two different tournaments at World Cup. Certainly, that's what we saw last time out. And so maybe you're right. I don't know. I just don't hold Argentina that high. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me. Anyway, let's move on. Let's look at, Jack, which is the easiest group? Like, which can you absolutely nail right now? Like, this team nails this group. This is done and dusted.
Okay, all right. That's a slightly different question. I kind of expect, when you said the easiest group, my head immediately went to who's going to be, you know, what groups are kind of most level, if you will. Like, what's the group you want to be in if you're a second, third tier team?
You can try.
So, I'll do that and then you can go to down the other end. But I think the answer to your question is probably England's group, if I'm honest. I think that you'll look at that, or maybe this Portuguese group, but equally that Colombia side have different gears that they go to in World Cup. So I'm not willing to kind of put that on the line in the same way. Maybe you look at Belgium actually in Group G and say Belgium, but Egypt, Iran, New Zealand would probably be the answer. But I think England's group is very, very comfortable from an England perspective. I would probably say the easiest groups in terms of where you'd want to be are probably the two with the holders, with the hosts, sorry, in them. So Group A, Mexico, South Africa, Korea Republic, and Czechia looks very open to me. That could go anywhere. I think that's a fun group. If you are the team that's come in there as the fourth tier, which is obviously Czechia, they will look at that group and be like, we might be able to get out of that. I think if you're Mexico as a host, you will look at that and think, yeah, they're games that are, you know, eminently winnable. I think South Africa will come into this World Cup with a renewed kind of confidence in the last couple of years and the way that they've performed. And we know that the Korea always turn up at World Cups and make things happen. They're difficult to beat. They've not had a great time of it of late, if I'm honest, in terms of their international performances. But like, I think that group is wide open. And I think that Group D with the US in it is wide open. I think that there was a lot of kind of celebration in the US when that group got drawn, Paraguay, Australia, and now Turkey. Turkey will come into that group and think we can win this. I think Australia will feel that they're being overlooked, and Paraguay are just incredibly hard to break down. Like, if you watch their games and watch a lot of them in CONMEBOL qualifying, they're just a very, very resilient, hard to break down side who are not going to go looking to punch out early. And that first game for the US is kind of like not the ideal time to play Paraguay either, because you want them to be chasing something. You want them to be chasing a win so that they come out of their shell a little bit more. I think that they will kind of settle in, look to kind of frustrate, especially in the opener against the hosts, and try and bide their time in some ways. Mm. But I think both of those groups, a little bit less so for Canada, because I think the Switzerland are a really, really good side. But I think the Group A and Group D are the two that I look at as being perhaps the most open of all of these.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like the way you've approached that one. If I was to say which is the easiest group, then I would say Portugal have got it nice. Like Uzbekistan, Colombia, and I have on in front of me right now Congo against Jamaica. It's 0-0 after 63 minutes. And as a Portuguese team, you're like, yeah, we'll take whichever one. Like, that's fine. Like, in a World Cup group stage, knowing you've got Uzbekistan and one of these two and Colombia, like, we're going through. Like, you're going through the group. So I'd say Portugal have got it easy. I also think Germany have got it easy. I do. Like,
I'd just be wary of that Ecuador team. Like, they're such an incredibly well-drilled unit. They do not give away goals. They're a massive set-piece threat. Like, I would not be taking that one particularly lightly, although I take your point in that they will definitely qualify. Like, I wouldn't have them down as absolute locked-in group winners, although I do make them favourites.
Well, before these playoffs, I don't know if this is still the case on how this comes through now that we have the playoff winners, but before this point, Germany were the team with the weakest overall group by average FIFA ranking. So that tells you that for a team like them, who are obviously like expected to be among, I don't know, quarterfinalists at least, they should be making it through. Obviously, Curaçao is the lowest ranked, the smallest team that you could hope to come up against, you know, a country of, what, 150,000 people. That's easy. That is easy for Germany. So I'd say those two, but I'm going to give the nod to Portugal.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Like, I still think we're kind of overlooking the Belgium one. That should be in there. And they feel like they're coming to the boil a little bit nicely, Belgium, at the right time. So
I didn't put this in. I actually would have added a new category, which is going to be the most boring group. And it would be that one, Belgium, Egypt, Iran, and New Zealand. I got no interest.
No, I actually disagree with that.
Really?
I think that group might be a bit mad, but like it will, I think that Belgium and Egypt will probably make it through, but I do think that there will be goals.
I just think those
group.
Two go for that. Those two are going through. Like I just can't see any
thing
surprise.
Is that the third place thing comes into play with like goals and like goal difference, etc., which I think is interesting because teams do need to go and score. So that does actually affect things in a positive way. So we'll see, but like, I take your point.
Okay, so next up, the question that's always asked, which is the group of death? How do you determine a group of death? What do you, because like people have the kind of different definitions and ideas of what it is. What do you think of a group of death as?
I think it's probably, you know, on paper and very simplistically, the group with the strongest teams in it. And sometimes that's three, sometimes it's four. I do think, you know, we're going to come back to the same point here that I made earlier, but the eight teams going through as the best third places does offset the idea of a group of death a bit, I think. Yeah. Like whoever comes out of this Bolivia-Iraq playoff is potentially in for an absolute hammering when this tournament comes around, because they have France, previous finalists and the, you know, winners the time before that, African champions Senegal, and a Norwegian side who absolutely slew all comers in kind of waltzing to qualification by absolutely slamming the hell out of everybody. So you kind of look at that and think, okay, that could be trouble. If that was two teams going through, Group I would 100% be the group of death: France, Senegal, Norway, and the winner of Bolivia, Iraq. But the fact that the three teams are going through, or should go through, especially if you do end up with a whipping boy in the group and you kind of end up with big scorelines that you're racking up, that I think is going to be difficult. And look, Bolivia struggle outside of El Alto, which is obviously something they're not going to be able to rely on in the same kind of way. Iraq are a very decent side, but you're talking about some of the big powerhouses, like teams that people will be tipping for quarterfinals, semifinals, finals in this group with them. That's a very difficult thing to put into context. Mm. And with this system, like, so I do think the idea of a group of death is kind of killed by the fact that there are third place teams going. But if you're looking at it on paper, like I can't really argue with anything but Group I.
Yeah. My other one I'd throw into the mix would probably be F, which is Netherlands, Japan, Sweden, and Tunisia. I think that that's lively. I'd say Netherlands will be people's, you know, favourites, but I'd say Japan are going to definitely run them close in that group. Japan, as I say, beat England 1-0 tonight and are on a good run at the moment, and they're growing in belief and technically very good. Sweden are going to be happy-go-lucky, but they're not just coming here for the ride now. Graham Potter's going to be like, lads, we can do this. And Tunisia are never like... They'll always
Tunisia
pull
were up. Heaps of fun in yes. the World Cup, in the World Cup qualifying. They were like an absolute beast. And I absolutely loved watching them play. They played 10, won 9, drew the other one, scored 22 goals and didn't concede. I spoke about them. You know, when we did the kind of ranking the early World Cup bits back in November, October, I did a bit on how I thought that it was probably not okay to call Morocco dark horses or kind of outside shouts anymore, considering their performance at the last. I did put Tunisia into that conversation. And yes, it was a relatively soft group, but they waltzed through it. And there's a lot of fun players in this Tunisia side. So they're not going to come to play. The problem is, Dean, that you have also, and I'm just going to skip forward a little bit here, you also asked which group would be the most chaotic.
Yes.
I think you have your answer, right? Like, I think this is a pretty open book. I think
that's funny.
Go in there, all guns blazing. I think Tunisia will go there, all guns blazing. Japan will be more reserved, but we know that they're an excellent footballing nation who know how to move the ball about. And you saw that in that game against England today. But as well as that, you have a Netherlands side who are a little bit brittle, a little bit fragile, who are still an excellent team and made just to the semifinals of the last Euros, but who don't feel like they have the kind of star power or put it together in the way that, you know, the great Netherlands teams of the late 80s and you know, and this the late 70s did. So you're kind of looking at it and thinking, that feels like anybody's business. And I think that that's a lot of fun. So whilst I agree with you that you could put it as a group of death, I think that that's the chaos fun. I think that's the chaos group.
Yeah, so that was going to be one of the other headlines, which will be most chaotic. And if, funny enough, I did also have that down as being the group. So it's good that we run that back to back. What's interesting about it is, again, if you go to the rankings, it's pretty tight between the best and the worst. It'll be among the smallest gaps that you see actually in the group stages. There's not a runaway favorite. Like, you're not expecting Netherlands to get 9 points. Like, that's, I don't think anyone's going to predict that. So yeah, that brings into the fact that pretty much everyone will believe they can beat everyone in that group, which yeah, adds to the chaos element, but also brings out that part of the group of death. Okay. The next segment then, Jack. Which group, this is a good one for any of you that like betting, because this is always a popular one amongst the bookies. Which group will have the most goals?
See, I'm struggling with this because tournament football is intrinsically cagey, right? And especially, so you can kind of look at it and say, the answer is probably Group I, because I reckon everyone is trying to rack up scorelines against the winner of that playoff between Bolivia and Iraq, right? And you're looking at three teams with incredible attacking intent in France, Senegal, and Norway. So the answer is probably that. But I am a bit drawn to Group A. This game with this, really? This group between Mexico, South Africa, Korea, and Czechia, just because I don't really know what's going to happen. And I think that of all these groups, there are some groups where if you're 2-0 down, like I think that Canada group is going to be really, really cagey and tight, right? But if you look at the Group A, I think there's going to be teams there who at 2-0 down are like, you know what? We can go for it. We've just seen it with Czechia, right? Four goals in both of their games in the playoffs. Okay, one of them had, you know, had two goals in extra time, sure. But like, they're kind of end to end and they can score from set pieces. I think that whereas with the groups that are kind of a little bit even, and I suppose it goes back to a slightly previous question, where the groups are a little bit more even, I think that there is a sense that at 1-0 or 2-0 down, you go for it. You kind of turn up the gears, as opposed to if you are a team in a group that you're like, actually goal difference might be really, really important here. You probably at 2-0 down, shut up shop. And you're like, we don't concede again. Like we absolutely don't, because that could down us. I think that these more open groups might lend themselves to a little bit more chaotic football and a little bit more chaotic games, and therefore might end up with the most goals in that kind of situation. So they're my two shouts from very opposite ends of the spectrum, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, my mind just automatically goes to the groups where you might get a whipping boy and you just get a giant smashing one of the smaller teams, and then they continue to leak goals against some of the others as well. So be tempted to probably go again at Group E, Germany, Curacao, Ivory Coast, Ecuador. Do think there's a chance you could be looking at something from there. Portugal, as I say, again, like, depends obviously what we get from Portugal at the World Cup. But if we get a front-footed Portugal and then Uzbekistan and Congo or Jamaica could be in trouble, and I would expect a lot of goals to come that way. That's the way I tend to try to judge that, rather than the goals being spread out. I usually look at that, but it's not always right. And the thing you have to remember too is that it comes down to those third group games. Like, what is on the line there? Mm. So you always need to, like, if you are genuinely looking at this from a betting perspective, for example, like, you need to think about what is going to be on the line in those last games. How much is it a reserve team that you're going to see put out? Is it the second string put out by a group winner? Or is it going to be more competitive? Is it going to be more goals, et cetera, et cetera? So I'm going to go for Group E for now.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I really struggle with is that we know Ecuador don't score or concede loads of goals, right? They're not a particularly entertaining side to watch. Ivory Coast were excellent in qualification, another team who didn't concede a goal. But I think that if you look at kind of their recent record and their recent kind of way of playing and how some of the things we've seen from them in their recent games, and I know that they've had some excellent performances. They beat Scotland today. They hammered South Korea a couple of days ago. But you're kind of looking at, you know, the AFCON games and thinking they might open up. But I just don't know if that's going to happen in the same kind of way with Ecuador. And if you have a team that are basically hell-bent on winning 1-0, you know, to kind of maximize their chances, which is perfectly fine for what it's worth. It's just, you know, one of those different things that's happening. Can you have that group as the goal, the group with the most goals? I'm not 100% sure. And that is how Ecuador are going to play.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That's a good point. I can't wait, by the way, to get closer to the tournament. And I've been recording a few random games over the last few days that I know that I'm going to want to like check out nearer the time. Like, we are getting exciting. Right. Okay. Here's a good one, Jack. I think the last one of this segment, which team has the most to lose? I've got like an out right here.
I think it's Argentina.
Oh, not the same as me.
I mean, look, they're current holders of the World Cup. And look, as I said before, the curse of the last winner has been somewhat shrugged. But Like, this is an Argentina side who come into this tournament in a strange little place, I think. Obviously, we saw the Finalissima cancelled, so we never got to see them play against Spain, which I think was something that a lot of people were looking forward to. There's still this bizarre situation with Lionel Messi as to whether he's going to play in the World Cup or not, and no real clarification on how that's shaking out at this point, which feels odd to me. Like, obviously, I think he will play, and I think he's within his rights to make his mind up, you know, closer to the time as well, but...
I can't believe he's going to say no. He lives here.
It just feels odd that like this is still hanging over them. And then they come into this group, as I said, right at the top with Austria and Algeria, which I think is difficult. And I'm writing off Jordan here. And I don't think that when it comes around to previewing these groups, I'll be doing the same. Like, I think this is a good side who have done very, very well to reach their first World Cup, but have kind of been building towards this for a number of different years and through a different sort of way of kind of progressing the program. And I think they're a really, really interesting side, Jordan, what they've been able to put together. I think this group on paper, if Argentina were to not win this group, that would be bigger for me than if Brazil didn't win their group. Because I think, like, I genuinely believe that Brazil won't win their group. Whereas I think that with Argentina, as much as I'm a little bit cagey about some of the performances in their game against Mauritania was really, really weird. Like, I think that if they were to not win a group with Algeria, Austria, and Jordan, people would be going ballistic. Like, headlines would be written left, right, and center. And I think that maybe that's a little bit unfair considering the caliber of some of these teams. But I think that if they were to not win it, they have the most to lose in the group stage by way of just what they're kind of playing out and the kind of narrative surrounding that team, who are, as we say, you know, reigning champions and looking to go back to back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. I guess actually what I'm looking at is similar in the sense of expectation, but I think the team with most to lose is USA. Like, okay. They've got a lot of pressure here and they're not that good. They're all right. They can be good. And actually, like, if you look at the rankings, they're ranked 16 at the moment by FIFA, but obviously, their Belgium shows some vulnerabilities. I've got my concerns about whether they can produce over one set of 90 minutes, let alone three sets of 90 minutes in the group stages. USA will be coming up against Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. Turkey are better than USA. Like, I say that quite comfortably, to be honest.
Turkey are better than a lot of teams. They're a good side.
So Turkey, even though they've had to go through a playoff to get here, it's funny, I just reminded myself of something someone said to me the other day. They said to me, if this tournament was not in America, USA would not be in it.
Yeah, we got that message on the radio a couple of days ago as well.
Do you think that's true?
No, I don't. No,
I don't. Because of the qualification process, I don't think that's true. But take the point that, like, there's definitely better teams than them that haven't qualified for this World Cup.
Yeah, but I mean, look, that's the case with a lot of things, just with the way the system works, right? Like, so that's fine. That's just the kind of the way of the world, the way of the World Cup in some ways. Yeah. But so, I think just on this point, though, this is interesting because when we're looking at this US side, the thing I'm really struggling with is that I don't quite know what they are yet. Whereas I think with the other hosts, with Canada in particular, but also with Mexico, I kind of know what I'm expecting from Mexico. I know I'm definitely not what I'm expecting from Canada under Jesse Marsh, but I'm not 100% sure what I am expecting from the US. And maybe this is partly a kind of visceral reaction to the fact that they went back to a back four against Belgium and it looked a little bit different. And suddenly they started, you know, doing some more complicated things than what we'd seen in those full friendlies where things were a little bit different and they'd gone back to the back three and everything just seemed simplified. Then they went into this one and Tanner Tesman was dropping between the centre-backs, which is fine. It's something he does with Leon where he's played centre-back quite a lot this season. But it just felt like the system overcomplicated itself. And in the second half, Belgium kind of came in at halftime and Rudy Garcia went, we'll just attack that area because they're leaving it completely vacant. And suddenly, you know, before you know it, you're 5-1 down. I think that they need to work out what this is and what it looks like very, very quickly. Obviously, we haven't seen the game against Portugal yet because it's yet to be played as we're speaking. But like, I'd like to see an identity again from this US side. before I kind of can, because we get to this point where we're previewing the World Cup and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to see. Like, I'm not sure what I'm expecting to see from Maurizio Pochettino in terms of formation, in terms of whether they're going to be front footed or whether they're going to play, you know, a little bit more reserved and play on the counter. There's a lot of questions, I think, over the US in a way that there isn't with a lot of national teams, because you kind of know what they're about because of their qualification process. The lack of that qualification process from a USMNT perspective, I think, puts us in a strange place in terms of trying to determine exactly what they are and exactly how good they are.
Yeah, I've said it a million times, but Mauricio Pochettino even suggesting that the semi-finals is plausible is utterly ridiculous. The president's not going to be impressed if he does tune in for any games at this rate, I don't think.
Probably low down my priority list, if I'm honest. Yeah. But like, yeah. I'd like to see this US side win for, you know, a fan base who are desperate to see it, and also for the continued growth.
I would like it for the tournament, right? And I'd like US to do better than I'm imagining right now. But I think they've got a lot to lose, mate. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how these last couple of months play out, how that squad selection goes. Lots and lots to be decided from a US perspective. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what this looks like. And even this game against Portugal, which you will have seen by the time that you're listening to this, we'll react to that over on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to take a little break there. We come back on the other side. Dean's going to take us through a couple of the games we cannot miss in this group stage. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the final part of today's Ranks FC episode, talking about the group stages of this World Cup. And Dean, going to hand it over to you. It's not quite a nonsense ranking, but it's something a little bit different.
It's kind of, yeah. And when I was trying to think of what we should talk about in the third part, I was thinking along those lines, but also on the same day, I'd been starting to think to myself about the World Cup and about, like, what did I want to see at the World Cup? And I was like, oh, a good ranking is like games you shouldn't miss or games you can't miss. And I'd already been starting making a list of the games that I really don't want to miss. Like, I don't want to miss any of them, but typically you do start to miss the odd one, apart from you. So look, the first game you can't miss is the first game. It's Mexico against South Africa. It's 11th of June. Doesn't sound that sexy to a lot of people, but it's the first game. We all love the first game. It's obviously got to have a big build up to it. It matters. It sets the tone for what's to come, and it can often be dramatic. So look, I know we have a lot of, quite a few Mexican listeners on here. So like, those guys are going to be excited. As I say, we'll be doing more delving into this on the Patreon too. And I know we've got a few listeners on there that like to get involved and give us their thoughts on Mexico's expectations and tactical style. As one of the hosts as well, obviously, that is a big game. So that is my first one that you can't miss, but it's pretty obvious. The next two are going to follow tack because it's the other two host nations. So very quickly, we see all of the hosts. So the next day, the 12th of June, is the first USA game. USA against Paraguay in LA. You can't miss it because this is, but if USA lose, like, this is huge. This is huge if USA lose.
That has nil written all over it.
That's not going to get people watching. And then on the same day, Canada play their first game. So that is to be watched. I think they'll play Bosnia.
They will. They'll play Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yeah. So Bosnia, who've just qualified right now, they play Canada. That'll actually be a decent game. That'll be even and it'll be good. So those are your hosts and the first game all wrapped into one. Now, the first good game is what we really want to know, right? What's the first good game? The first one I really can't miss as a neutral. Well, it's the next day, the 13th of June. What we talked about earlier, Brazil v Morocco in New York. This is the one. This is the one to absolutely stick in your calendar because we might get our first upset. But even if you don't know what an upset means there because you're not sure which team you rate higher, you're going to get a high quality football match with big implications. And that's what you want in an early World Cup game, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah, 100%. Like, this was the first one circled on my calendar as well. I'm really, really excited about how it all shakes out. So when you kind of look at it in terms of big games between big nations that might well end up kind of having a kind of huge, huge say in who ends up in what side of the bracket and all of those things that are going to kind of shake out later on. This is the first one that jumped out for me when they're all stretched out in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next up, we've got first mismatch. So if you're just someone that's just like loves goals or just loves seeing teams get absolutely stuffed, then these are the ones you might need to look out for. Now, I don't know which of these is going to happen, but one of these two games is going to be the one where you see a big scoreline probably. It's certainly the first mismatch in terms of rank and pedigree at this tournament. So on the 14th of June, you've got Germany against Curaçao in Houston. So that's going to be certainly one where Germany have a lot of expectation on them to score goals. And then the next day, 15th of June in Atlanta, Spain against Cape Verde. So that is definitely the two games where you're looking at just lopsided expectations.
I'm going to have absolutely no Blue Sharks anti-chat on here, I'm afraid. No, I am so high on Cape Verde. I know that, but also... Also, I have Spain Spain is my outright favourites to win the World Cup. So, you know,
that's from this match. Like, that's a mismatch if you ever heard one. All right. 6-0 Spain. Who knows? let's move it on. The 16th of June, Jack. It's the first Messi game, probably, if he's there. Argentina play Algeria and... Once Messi announces that he is going to be playing at the World Cup, then all the eyes go, okay, well, when's he playing? Where can we watch Messi in action? Well, there you go. Argentina against Algeria, 16th of June. That's the one you're going to have eyes on. What's your bet, Jack? Will he be there or will he not be there?
He will be there. Pretty sure he'll be there. Do you know what? I had a quick
They'll
look
move
at this.
It to Miami or something just to make sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, would you bet against it at this point?
Really,
I
definitely would. Just be on a new stadium just for it. I mean, named it after him.
He's only played Algeria once in his career. It was a friendly, Argentina against Algeria. He scored twice and got an assist. So the record's good.
Absolutely. By that same note, we should probably point out that Cristiano Ronaldo will also have his first game coming up around the same time. He'll have to let Messi take center stage at first because Messi's going to be playing the day before. But on the 17th of June, Portugal will get their campaign up and running. Portugal will be playing Congo or Jamaica. And as that game is still going on as we record this podcast, one of the Congo players has just tried to score with a back heel, not managed to break the deadlock there. So they are 1 minute away from heading into extra time. But that's who Ronaldo will be coming up against first. So I guess a potential mismatch there too. And then it's the one for me, Jack, the first England game. The first England game is on the 17th of June. We play against Croatia. And I'll be honest, mate, I'm not that excited about it at this stage. Like, I'm excited about the World Cup massively. But Croatia's not a great one to be getting up and running for. Not with this England team in this current mindset either. I don't know what our team looks like. I don't know which players are going to be fit. I don't know if I trust Thomas Tuchel. And what I also know is I never, ever like playing against Croatia. So 17th of June, England, Croatia in Dallas. You can't miss it because, well, it's a big England game and a lot of our listeners are English. But if you don't like England, well, they might not even win the game.
Yeah, double-double for everyone around the globe. I mean, Dean, I love all of those shouts, but you've missed a massive one, unfortunately. Sure. You've missed a big one. June the 16th, New York City. France against Senegal, the rematch of that opening game of the 2002 World Cup where Senegal shocked the world champions, Papa Bouba Diop, God rest his soul, scoring the only goal in a 1-0 Senegal win over France. And just one of the most incredible scenes. That was in Seoul. I remember being up at like, you know, a ridiculous hour in the morning to watch it. But what incredible scenes when Senegal won that game. An incredible performance from an incredible Senegal team. And that rematch, the first game that both of these will play 24 years later, where, you know, both teams will be up for it. Obviously, quite a lot of, you know, shared language, etc., between the two nations. We know that, you know, Senegal have played a few games. They recently played in France and paraded the AFCON trophy around in Paris, which was quite excellent. Enjoyed that very, very much. But they will come up against each other in the opening game of Group I. As we said earlier, perhaps the group of death. I can't wait. That is my number one pick, first game, biggest highlight around it of the entire first round of matches.
Well, good news for you as well is that that one's being played about 8 p.m. your time. So at least you won't have to wait up too long for it. You've got some late nights coming up or early mornings, haven't you?
Oh, no. The late bird, Jack Collins, strikes again. This is where I come into my own, mate.
The 2 a.m. kickoffs.
2 a.m. kickoff, so my kind of dream day, because I'm like, well, I couldn't go to bed. I had to watch the World Cup. Got to become
nocturnal for a month. You'll have like a couple of like 5 a.m.s, won't you?
Yeah.
Because there's not like many, Austria v. Jordan. It says it's 9 p.m. my time.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's 5 a.m. for you. And if you're, well, you've got a tricky day that day, actually, because
my sleep schedule is just going out the window. I'm going to be taking like naps. Yeah.
June 16th, you've got Argentina, Algeria. You've got that kicking off about 2 a.m. And then you've got Austria, Jordan kicking off about 5 a.m. it says on here. That's a nightmare, mate.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen that is so it's what you do is you watch the opening two. So you watch France, Senegal, and then you watch whoever is playing between Bolivia and Iraq against Norway. You go for bed for a couple of hours. You get back up to watch the 2 a.m. and the 5 a.m. Then you go back to bed. That's what I'm going to do anyway.
Well, most people have jobs and are not going to be able to do that.
My job is watching these games, mate, so I can report on here with you.
You're lucky. You're lucky.
I'm a lucky man, as the Verve once said.
I'm lucky. You employ me here to be part of your podcast. but, mate, that's a 1 hour and we've covered a lot considering the draw's literally just complete. I think we've done a good job.
Yeah, I think we've covered the bases well in this episode. And thank you. That group of games to watch there for people, I think, is going to be an important bit. We'll clip all these bits up, etc., and make sure that they stick. But these are things and topics we're going to come back to closer to the time when we do those full previews. We're going to be looking at each of these groups in real detail as well and kind of diving into the tactical setup of so many of them. Might have to rope in Sam and Doogie to help us out on these, Dean. There's a lot of teams here for us to get through. So we'll see how.
Yeah, we could do with those two, to be fair. Might have to get them involved a bit more. Yeah, good point.
We'll see how we go. And Sam and Diggy are back on Friday with The Truth, where they're talking about how to replace legendary players leaving their clubs at the end of the season. Mo Salah, Antoine Griezmann, Casemiro, Bernardo Silva, the names list off. And how those teams replace them is going to be a very interesting detail of this summer's transfer market. So something a little bit different coming on The Truth. But for now, Dean, I think we'll probably call this to a close, which means all that's left for me to do is say a massive thank you to you, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranking the World Cup Groups here on Ranks FC as we come towards the end of the qualification process. It has been a long, old process, but we are there, ladies and gentlemen. 48 teams at the World Cup, and we cannot wait. We hope you're as excited as we are, and we're going to be building up loads more, as we say, as we get closer to the tournament. But for now, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you all very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.